Hello and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 20, The Italian Job, from 2003. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski. With us today, not one, but two guests. First off, we have, returning as our Mark Wahlberg Charlize Theron expert,
that's right,
back from the yards, Zach Dezon. Hello, Zach.
Hello.
I didn't realize the connection until about halfway through this movie. I was like, holy shit, Zach is just here for all the Marky Mark that we got on this podcast.
I immediately noticed that.
You are back once again for this.
I'm so glad to be back too. Yeah, I mean, it was really wonderful seeing him pop up, and yeah, I had no idea that was going
to
happen.
With us also today, we have a first-time guest to the podcast that Mike and I do, someone from the Now and Again corner of the world, one of Chris Mattiello's friends, Chris, who has not been a guest on this podcast, but will be before long. We have Jared Brown. Hello, Jared.
Hello, how are you guys tonight?
I am well. How are you? Were you on Now and Again?
I did the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater EP,
yes.
So that was really
nice.
The first time. And I'm trying to get back on, but Chris is busy with other things, so there's that.
Gotcha. Well, you are here now, making your triumphant return to the podcast network to talk about this sexist piece of shit movie that I had no idea how much I was going to dislike until I rewatched it today. And boy, oh boy, do I have problems with it.
It is definitely problematic.
Hashtag problematic. Before we get going, we sort of, you know, did a little bit of a level set, I think, with Zach maybe last time, maybe not. I don't know. We're bad businessmen. But Jared, in terms of Charlize Theron, what's your opinion on her? What movies do you like of hers? Had you seen this one before? Give us the Charlize 411 from your corner.
Well, I've always liked her. She's one of the actresses that I say I haven't seen really a bad movie from her, so I do enjoy her movies. This is actually one of my favorites, believe it or not, just because it's such a bad version for her. Like, she did this, and then she did Monster right after. So I'm like, how can you go from a bad movie like this, well, not bad, but like an action movie like this that's cheesy and predictable, to something that is awesome like Monster? And it's like, I don't get it.
Yeah, she hasn't really done a whole lot of prestige work before Monster. Yeah. So as we've been going through this, I have noticed, and Joey, I think, backed me up, like, she's been pretty much great, even if the movie's been terrible.
Yes, pretty much, yep.
Yeah, and, like, helps you kind of get to the end of a couple of them just by being in it. She's just been, like, in these types of movies, and then in the next movie she's going to be in, like, considered more of a dramatic prestige star, like, right out of the gate. But it is kind of weird. You usually do an Oscar movie and then a movie like this after it, you know?
Like, yeah. like a Cage did, where he went from Leaving Las Vegas to The Rock. Like,
yeah, and I think of Halle Berry or something. Where she,
yeah, Halle Berry.
Run it. Yeah, and did Catwoman or something. But
okay, let's just do this off the bat. So this movie sucks. This movie is a piece of shit. It is sexist in so many ways that I really feel like I might have noticed, but watching For Charlize really opened my eyes to it. Like, watching 20 movies in a row for this podcast with a woman at the center of our focus has really made me think differently about movies, to the fact that she's probably the only woman in this entire movie with dialogue. There is a second woman, Becky, who only exists for Charlize to become.
Who might have a twin sister that she doesn't even know about. I mean,
100% of her dialogue is voiced by Seth Green, so that's cool.
That seems hilarious, by the way.
The role Charlize is set to play, this master safecracker, daughter of a legendary thief,
yeah.
Her role is to be the date, the decoy, the, like, hey, you be the distraction, you be the bait, you're gonna lure Edward Norton away, who is terrible in this movie, holy shit.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to do all the work. So there's that. And
wait,
then
she's also the driver in a way that's weirdly better. She's better than the other driver. Like,
yeah.
Jason Statham is supposedly the driver, but she actually gets more driving time.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up a little later. She's the better driver than Jason Statham, 100%. And I'll touch on that when we get to that initial meeting scene of her, because that is just something impressive.
And then the last thing, the cherry on top of this shit sundae, is that at the end of the movie, everyone gets a happy ending. And what's her happy ending? She gets to be Mark Wahlberg's trophy. She doesn't even get a resolution. Her resolution is that Mark Wahlberg gets the girl that he wants, and she's happy with him in Venice. Like,
yeah,
fuck this movie.
Like, the problem, yeah, her resolution is actually getting to punch Edward Norton in the face. And I'm not saying, like, that's better or anything. Great. But like, she doesn't, you're right, she doesn't get, we don't get to see how she wanted to spend her money. I mean, it's not necessarily her character's movie. I'm not cool with anything. I mean, I just want to get that up front.
Mike and I are going to convince you that this is a minor masterpiece.
No, by no means, no. But like I don't know, like, I feel like I should have saved all of my venom from last week for this movie, Joey. Like, I feel really bad now about waking up in Reno and my behavior on that episode, because I just, like, I'm exhausted now, and I really feel like all of that animosity should have been targeted toward this episode. They come so close, right? Like, she's this awesome safecracker. She's the daughter of the dead thief that they're all trying to get revenge for. Like, she should be the Mark Wahlberg character, like, setting up the heist, running the show, all that stuff. But she isn't. Unfortunately, that her safe cracking abilities really only come into play like at that one moment. And yeah, she is sort of used more for her like ability as a distraction, which is problematic, of course. I've got lots of other grievances, but let me pass the baton for a little while.
I just remember loving this movie when I was, I guess, 15 this movie came out. I do have that guilt riding with me, but also there was a certain amount of nostalgia involved in watching this. But yeah,
I think this is great for a 15-year-old. Like, oh, this, yeah. You know, like, this hits all of those like adolescent buttons, and I think that's the issue. It's like a movie for 15-year-olds. Like, yeah. It doesn't hold up for us.
I really enjoy the first 10 to 15 minutes of this movie. The actual Italian part of this movie, I think, is fantastic.
I think the pacing of the first like hour 20 is atrocious. Like, I think everything is so goddamn slow for no reason. The fact that there's no score in the opening sequence, like, why is that? Like, why is there no tension? It's just like a bunch of guys just doing a heist, and like, there's no stakes. Like,
was there no score? Because the rest of the movie, the score was overbearing.
Well, there was
bombastic.
If there was a score, it was very subtle, because I was paying attention. Because again, I've said this, I think, on Cinemakers, like, for me to notice the score is usually surprising, that there's either something going wrong with the scene one way or another. Like, I usually, like, when it's working, I don't usually pay attention to it. It's just that when it's like not working, that's when I pick up on it. And here, it was just like, oh wow, it's just like, it's just quiet.
Huh.
I like the idea of starting a movie mid-heist, but it also just didn't feel tense at all to me. I don't know.
And I will agree with that totally, Joey. It just didn't feel like something that should happen. I mean, that intro with the mask was just so long and ridiculous that it got to the point where I'm like, is this movie going to start anytime soon?
Yeah, it is kind of weird. It does come in a weird place like that, where it almost feels like the end of another movie or something. And that's possible. Like, James Bond does stuff like this great a lot of the times, where it's like the cold open, you know, and it's the heist or the job or whatever he's getting in or out of trouble, and then the movie starts, and it's cool. But there's just like no energy here, I feel like. It just feels like you said, someone said, no stakes. Like, I just don't get the danger. Everyone knows that they're already going to get away with it, and yeah, and it's obvious. I kind of felt like, even the first time watching this, it's, and second time, it's so obvious that like Ed Norton's gonna double cross them. Like, he's just the only one that is not like on the same wavelength as the rest of them.
I did not expect Ed. I'd seen this movie before. I totally forgot that was gonna happen, and I actually enjoyed the first part. I don't know, I enjoyed seeing everybody at the top of their game, just doing their thing and just doing it well. I guess I enjoyed that part of the movie.
Well, I mean, like, the best stuff is definitely when no one's talking and they're doing action and stuff. Like, later on when they're driving through the subway and tunnel and all that, and, you know, when they're practicing the heist, like, when they're actually, like, the action is pretty okay, you know, like, all that stuff, it looks fine, but it's just, like, all the dialogue and all
the dialogue
character traits.
So bad.
It's just, yeah, it's real cheesy.
You know what fine stands for?
Oh, God.
Was that from this? Because, I mean, I didn't
hear
people say that until this movie.
It's in the original, apparently. In the original, the F is for fucked up, but they changed it to whatever they changed it for here.
Gotta get that PG-13.
Freaked out, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
That's kind of a grievance I had. Like, normally I don't mind, like, remake, whatever. Like, I actually thought this was going to be a straight-up remake the first time I saw it, and then I was like, oh, they're doing something with it on their own. But then I was like, why are they even calling this the Italian Job? It should be, like, the California Job.
Yeah.
Well, so hold on. What I found on IMDb, which is remarkable, Mike, is that there was a sequel planned for this movie. The movie cost, let me get the actual numbers before I make this wrong. The movie cost 60. It made in the US 106, and it made worldwide 176.
Wow, this cost 60? It looks a little cheaper than that, actually.
What? Well, those action sequences were not cheap.
I think it looks pretty nice. I don't have a problem with costing 60.
They spent the money on the budget for the car, for the naming rights for it, and also for the cars.
What? No, they got money on that. They made money on money that.
They used, I think, 33 Minis in this. Yeah. So there was a lot of money spent to the Mini Coopers.
Wait, are you telling me that Mini didn't pay for that product placement?
Oh, almost certainly.
They probably did.
They didn't spend a dime on Mini Coopers on this movie.
That's probably true.
They made money on those Mini Coopers.
This was actually the movie that launched the new Mini Cooper to where it is today, because before that, everyone was looking at it like saying, why would they revive the Mini? It doesn't make any sense. And then after the Italian Job came out, you saw them everywhere. And now they're kind of like down back to where they were when they first came out, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not. I mean, people must have thought they were going to be great getaway cars, and then they ended up not pulling lots of heists, so...
Well, it's actually, it almost undermines the Mini, because there's a scene where they're like, well, these cars can't really do much yet, but we have a guy.
Right? Yeah. We have to, like, add suspension to them, and they don't do what we want them to do.
So the movie apparently opened fairly well, but then they really spread it wide to hit that magical $100 million mark, and it just pressed it over that and ended up with 106 in the US. So apparently it was a failure, even though it, by all intents and purposes, made its money back. Even if you double the budget for marketing, you know, with the worldwide take, they probably made $60 million on this. Apparently, that was enough of a failure to scrap the sequel, which was tentatively being called The Brazilian Job.
Ooh.
Oh my God. That script That's was terrible. Then retooled to become Fast Five.
Holy shit!
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right?
Dude, like, that makes so much sense.
That movie is amazing.
And this feels like a fucking knockoff Fast and Furious movie. And it's even crazier because the director's going to go on and direct Fate of the Furious. So there's all of this in there. Like, I feel all of that element in this movie. It's so crazy. I can't believe that, wow, they retrofitted that script and it became an amazing movie. A part five, no less. Like, a part two became a part five. That's awesome.
Upgrade.
And this is also, I mean, for some Too Fast, Too Forever, Fast and Furious connections, F. Gary Gray would go on to direct Fate of the Furious, which also featured Charlize and Jason Statham. So this is sort of a prequel of sorts.
A pre-union.
Except... Oh, man. Yeah, pre-union. Absolutely. But when I read that this was the sequel was going to basically be Fast Five, like, Fast Five is one of my favorite movies. It's my favorite Fast and Furious movie. Fast and Furious is my favorite franchise. For the sequel, the almost sequel to this shitty movie, if that would have robbed us of the greatness that is Fast Five.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with that.
We never would have known, but man, oh, man.
That's a great development rabbit hole there. Like, because this was a remake, you know, and then its potential sequel went on to become like a whole other part of a franchise. Like, that's great. It was almost worth rewatching it just to learn that tonight. Hey guys, remember Napster?
Oh my god.
They really were banking on those jokes. They were not banking on rewatchability in the future at all.
Ooh, it reminded me of something John Oliver like talked about just last night as we were recording this, where it's like, it's really tricky
to
Google Glass and like predict the future, and like, don't always want to like predict technology and put it in your movie or your TV show in like a big way or anything, because you're just... They really committed to that, man. That was heavy.
Which, I mean, Seth Green's computer can do absolutely anything. You want to talk about just technology being insane?
Oh, yeah. Let me hack into the database 15 times and fail and then magically get in. Come on now. Get
there's
real.
There's a lot of just kind of like making the audience kind of just believe. It's just like, I mean, I guess it's just very hard when there are at least two characters whose jobs... You kind of have to take their word for it that they're doing well, the safecracker and the computer guy, because there's no way to really just properly show what they do.
There's that moment where they all like they're talking about turning all the lights green, and I feel like that is like the hacker sort of like baseline test. Like if you want to be on the crew, you got to be able to turn all of the street lights green when we need them.
Is that showing up in other movies?
Yeah.
Oh, that's been in a bunch of movies. Yeah. I even think it's been in like Fast 8.
Yes, it was.
I haven't seen any Fast and the Furious movies. I know.
Oh, someone's due for a lap, but. But like Mark Wahlberg like basically turns to Seth Green. He's like, you could do it, right? And Seth Green's like, I guess I could do it. And he's like, yeah, you're our, it's, he's basically saying, like, anything we need, let's just say he can do it, and yeah, then the audience will think that he's doing it, like, off-screen or something.
Yeah, he unlocks a gate in the first scene just with a keystroke. I mean, Venice is known for how internet-connected it is, right?
Yeah. What really bothers me about that Seth Green thing is that, like, his quote-unquote test or his trial run is like fucking up cars. Like, he's setting up to be green and he's doing thousands of dollars in damage as like a trial run. Like, they're not even, like, they're just seeing that they can. Like, can't you do that on like a not busy intersection? Like, literally anywhere else?
Then again, every intersection in LA is busy, so it's like, yeah, it's gonna happen no matter what.
Yeah, and I don't understand how they haven't gotten caught. It's insane. Like, they don't ever reference that they're down with law enforcement on any level whatsoever. But like you say, Joey, like, Seth Green is causing all these accidents. You'd think that they'd bring in some kind of task force to figure out something must be going on. Something's going down.
It's Marky Mark, and they end up in the yards at the end, so...
I would love that if they're like, hey, remember that time that we were kissing cousins back in New York? So, Mike, this is something, what's weird to me, and maybe just because we watched three Cage movies the other day, but I picked up four different Cage movies that this feels like.
I got a couple, too.
Number one, obviously, we just watched it, Stolen, because not only are they stealing gold, but they are stealing gold from below, and they are, you know, basically cutting a hole in the bottom and stealing the gold that way. Yeah. So that's number one. Obviously, Gone in 60 Seconds, because that's just, you know, cars and stuff. I got a real National Treasure vibe from the opening credits, and also the fact that they just appear in the snowy mountains for no reason. Like, that's that.
I feel like the whole vibe of this is very sort of family friendly, like, in a lot of ways. Like, not that this is an entire, not that I'm saying, you know, this is okay for families to watch together or anything, but I'm just saying in terms of, like, it's very safe and, like, consequence free and all of that, and bright, and, like, nothing is ultimately going to go wrong. None of our, aside from Donald Sutherland, no one's going to die.
And my fourth Cage movie that this reminded me of was The Trust, where Cage is writing, hacking that safe, and he's writing the numbers on the door, which Charlize is doing here too. I'm sure that there's more, but I was like, I'd rather watch any of those four movies again.
We watched Bangkok Dangerous the other day, and they have the canal chase. It was sort of like
them going through
Venice here. So
Absolutely.
I picked up on that. We were even saying, have they ever done like a channel chase in another movie? And one of us said something about Italy, but I don't think we ever put this together.
No, definitely not. I mean, this movie has not been on my brain since I saw it. Probably in theaters, maybe? I don't know. This was also my college freshman roommate's favorite movie, and he watched it all the time, and I did not like him as a roommate. And so that did not at all dissuade me from enjoying this movie tonight, but it's one other thing that this movie has going against it. Same thing for Kevin Smith. He loves Kevin Smith. He loves Italian Job. And both of those things I'm not fond about.
Speaking of, like, remembering it weird, I have never seen the original Italian Job, but I thought for sure Michael Caine was in this movie. I remember it so clearly.
He is in this movie. There's a shot of him because Ed Norton is watching the original Italian.
Yeah. I did pick up on that real quick.
But okay. I do get what you're saying, Zach.
I did not remember Donald Sutherland. I remembered Michael Caine.
Right. I didn't go back to check, but I don't think Donald Sutherland's in the original either. But I would. I don't know. I haven't seen the original in a long time.
Universe swap thing.
Exactly. Yeah, we're remembering it wrong or something. All collectively, I remember the original is just, I don't remember everything about it, but I just remember that movie is awesome. That is just like a really great, crazy heist film. I would definitely recommend that, not even remembering it all too well, just the feeling of remembering it.
You know, speaking of Donald Sutherland, and I guess what could have maybe been a Michael Caine role, who knows, why not make it Michael Caine in that role? Like, what, you mean?
Yeah, just straight up sequel or something.
Add some continuity.
This is one of the very few times that Charlize has had a dad in a movie. However, here, her dad dies again. So, like, just like in real life, and just like the last time, I don't remember what the last time was, but, like, when she
Bagger
has a
Vance,
dad,
her
Bagger
dad
Vance,
died.
Her dad always dies.
Wait,
and her dad
in real life,
gets
Charlize Theron's dad died horribly?
In real life, her mother shot and killed her father because her father was an abusive, abusive man.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's kind of... tragedy.
Yeah, but it's weird though, right? Isn't it, Mike? Because we talked about it. You brought it up because I didn't even think about it. You brought it up on Bagger Vance, like, she finally has a dad and he dies by a bullet. I mean, it's a self-inflicted bullet, but here she's a dad again and he gets shot. Like, it's just what?
Why do you keep doing this to poor Charlize?
Her more than Cage or Keanu has, like, been living out parts of her life throughout her films. You know, just like things in her personal life have, like, it seems like she's been dealing with them through making these movies. Like, she had those teeth issues as a kid, and then she played the, like, love interest of a dentist in That Thing You Do, and like all the father issues and stuff, and like she's even shot her husband in films and everything, so assuming her mother's role in, and you know, like, it's just weirder when you think about it. If you need to, you can sort of make those connections.
Super weird.
You know what's kind of weird? Mos Def plays a deaf guy in this movie.
Yassine Bey plays a deaf guy. Go figure.
I mean, there's not a lot of diversity in here, but I like Mos Def a lot. Like, I think he's a good presence. He's a good rapping actor, so he's a raptor, in my opinion.
True. We're going to have to nominate him for this, even though he doesn't have much of a role. We're going to have to nominate him for a raptor at the end of this episode.
Well, he's in that one Bruce with 16 Blocks, which, Joey, you told me I should check that out, right? I think it was
No.
Oh.
You asked me about it, but I haven't seen that. I know him from Be Kind Rewind.
Oh, because I know him from Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in that.
You know who's not great is Edward Norton in this movie.
Nor his facial hair.
Yes, I was just going to bring that up, actually. He looks like a 70s porn star almost with that mustache.
Which he was much better as that.
He looks so, like, sleazy.
Yeah, it's so weird that he went on to be the Hulk after this, right? Like, that's weird to think about, is that, because I just think of him more as, like, a villainous character. Like, I think he plays villains better. This kind of guy reminded me of the guy from Rounders a little bit, like that kind of sleazeball.
So here's the story about this role, is that Edward Norton, this is from IMDb, so I'm, again, don't know if this is true or not, assuming it's true, treating it like gospel. So he made it clear, apparently, I don't know, in promoting this movie or after the movie or whatever, that this was, he only did this movie because of a contract requirement from Paramount.
Wow.
So he signed a 3-picture deal with Paramount. First one was Primal Fear, which is like his breakout role. And then he kept dismissing role after role, movie after movie. Eventually, Paramount was like, you got to stop this. This is the movie you're doing. And so he finally was just like, all right, fine. Apparently did not hide his misery on set, had fights with cast and crew. And then when the producer gave out gifts at the end, when the movie made more money than they were expecting, Edward Norton returned the gift with a note saying, give this to someone you actually like or someone who actually likes you. So,
Wow.
It's difficult to watch him, because he is, to say he's not putting forth effort in this movie is unfair to effort. Like, he is not trying in the slightest.
You can see it at times. Like, even when he's flirting with Charlize and when he's in the house and she's looking for the safe, you can clearly see that he's not interested in this movie at all. Like, he just wants to shoot his scenes and get the hell out.
What's unfortunate, too, is that I feel like Seth Green and Jason Statham became great friends, and Mos Def, like, and even Mark Wahlberg. Like, I feel like the four of them feel like, at least they felt like friends, that they were having fun. Like, I got a lot of the sense of fun just from those guys, not exactly from, like, the plot or anything like that. When they had just finished their heist and they're in the Alps or wherever, they're in the mountains and they're drinking their champagne. Yeah, Ed Norton is checked out. Like, he is definitely not paying any attention to what anyone's saying or doing, and is just, like, going through those motions. When he pulls that gun, it is, like, the weakest reveal, I gotcha moment that I've ever seen. It's a shame, but, like, he is just not present.
Everyone else on set probably just bonded over hating Ed Norton.
Well, that's probably true. I also read, also on IMDb Trivia, so again, take this for what it's worth, but that F. Gary Gray was apparently crying, laughing so hard at Seth Green's improvisations. So, like, I think people had fun on set, because, like, this is, like, it's a nothing movie. It's a fluff movie. It's a movie that's going to look good, that's supposed to, like, feel cool and be, like, the slick action heist movie. You know, whether or not it actually turns out to be that, which it's not, you don't know that while you're shooting. It's, like, it's supposed to be fun. But then to have somebody just miserable on set, I guess you sort of bond over hating him, but also just, it's a bunch of people, you know, that you presumably like and, you know, want to spend time with doing a fun movie. It's fun, except unless you're Edward Norton, and then unless the movie turns out the way that it turns out.
Yeah, I think the issue is that it's like, it's fixable, this movie, like, in very sort of easy ways, you know, like, get rid of Ed Norton, add another strong female presence, like, you know, a little more diversity of their crew or something. Like, I don't feel
just
like
just make
it's
him Fast and Furious. Just do
yeah,
what they
no, so honestly, like, yeah, like, it wants to be, like, do that. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, this movie works, like, over and over again. So I don't know why didn't it work this time with this crew? Like, it's also, like you said, Joey, very early on, like, that the over-sexism and stuff is just, like, it just shines so hard this time.
Amazing. There's also the other moment where Charlize is like practicing the safe cracking.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. Good.
And she's wearing headphones so she can listen. And for some reason in this movie, she's doing it in a bra in her hotel room, which I guess nothing against that. She's in the privacy of her hotel room. Mark Wahlberg knocks on the door. She doesn't hear him because she's focusing. He lets himself in, startles her, and then sees her like in her underwear. It's like, why is this in the movie other than to put Charlize in a bra? But like, I don't get it.
And he touches her inappropriately, like on her shoulder, and she cringes, and it's like a whole moment. It's like, why is this moment in the movie? Why can't he just knock louder? Like, there's so many ways to easily rewrite this to make it not creepy. And
right. And I don't think it's Mark Wahlberg's fault. Like, I don't think that's him. Like, I think he's like feeling as uncomfortable. Like in this whole movie, he's like, I don't want, like, it feels like, to me, like he's smiling. Like, I don't want to be here either. Like, this is weird.
And like, you can even see it with him at times too, during the filming of it. Like, he's like, man, why did I sign up for this? Oh wait, just to get a paycheck. That's right.
It didn't even make sense for his character. He's not the lock breaker. He's right. The planner guy.
Yeah. He's like the whole mastermind type
he's
of guy.
I think he had to go in and tell her that she needed to pose as the cable guy or something like that. But like, it's like, dude, that can wait like for a little while. Like, she's practicing. Let her
do
her thing.
Before everyone had cell phones, man.
Yeah. I actually think Wahlberg, like, I don't know, he looked kind of silly. Like, I'm not used to him smiling so much, I guess.
Yeah,
like, I
was,
you know, and just he's right from the start, he's just got a shit eating grin looking on his face. And it's just, why are you smiling throughout this whole movie? Like, it threw me. It made me, like,
it's hard to believe he's a mastermind. And you don't actually really see him doing any masterminding.
No, yeah, that's fairly. Another moment where people are like talking other people's game for them, you know, where it's like, he's the best mastermind there ever was. And it's like, are you just take my word for it.
There's another great bit of sexism in this movie where at the very, very end of the movie, Seth Green's happy ending is that he's finally acknowledged as the founder of Napster. That notoriety and fame apparently encourages someone who looks like Kelly Brook, who is Kelly Brook, who was dating Jason Statham at the time, to go to his apartment or house or whatever, and he's created speakers that are so loud that they blow a woman's clothes off. And we don't see it, but we hear it. And I was thinking, wouldn't that just make her go deaf? Like, wouldn't that make everybody go
too.
Deaf?
Wouldn't it, if you can lower his clothes off, it probably did something bad to her skin, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just seemed like a weird payoff, too, because when he mentions it earlier, it seems like he just added, like, he's like, I want this speaker system. And then he sounds like a nerd, so he looks at Jason Statham, and he's like, oh, you know, they're, like, strong enough to blow a girl's clothes off. And then they like, he's like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It's a typical 90s stereotype.
But it's like an 80s gag.
The hacker is the lonely guy who wants to be in a relationship more than anyone. And of course, they gave it to Seth Green, who's perfect for it. So it sort of works, but it doesn't in this movie.
And it doubles down on that in that he's not good at anything else. Like when he rolls up on that motorcycle for some reason, like he can't even dribble it along. Like, I don't know what the verb is, but like, what's the verb for driving a motorcycle as slowly as humanly possible?
I think you could pedal
and still
it, right?
Unable to do that. I guess just pedal it. Yeah, like he is struggling to even do that. And like, it's like, look at this guy, he can't do anything but hack. Let's just call him Mr. Napster or whatever and just be on with it. Oh, also, by the way, that guy who steals Napster from him is actually the guy who created Napster. Like, it's not Sean Parker.
It's
not Sean Parker, it's a different guy.
Sean Fanning,
who's the other?
Yes.
Sean Fan. You know what else is kind of like bugged me about that joke about the motorcycle? Like, so Marky Mark and Charlize like get to the rendezvous like super fast because she's like a crazy awesome driver for no reason.
Right.
Because I guess this was supposed to be maybe a Fast and Furious
movie.
Well,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Before you go further, like, I'm okay with them being great at everything because like in the Fast and Furious, everybody is now great at everything. Like, everybody's a hacker. Everybody can shoot guns really well. Everybody can drive really well. I don't have a problem with that.
No. But like, they get to the rendezvous and Mark Wahlberg's like, you know, like, we're kind of early. Like, I didn't expect us to get here so soon. We're going to have to wait for a while. But then right away, like, Seth Green shows up. It's like, they weren't...
He beats the driver.
It's like another one of those moments, though, where it's like, wow, you're a fantastic driver. Like, this is going to come in handy at the end of the movie. What, they couldn't wait? Like, have, like, a little scene there and maybe get to know each other for a minute?
Nope.
Or at least, like, cut and do a time jump or something? It's like...
It's on the cutting room floor,
you just stepped
I'm sure.
on your own line. It's weird.
There's apparently a lot on the cutting room floor. I don't remember what specifically, but there's a lot of things that are, like, in the IMDb trivia, it's about, like, alternate takes and extended scenes and like different subthreads and stuff like that. So I feel like what we see here, it works as a movie. It doesn't work as a good movie, but like I think the narrative structure of this makes sense aside from some sort of head-scratching things like that. But I do sort of wonder what didn't make it in, if there's stuff that would make this better, because I feel like this is the kind of movie, I'm glad it's not, but it's the kind of movie that could be like 2 hours and 20 minutes. Like, it be like this really kind of bloated, sort of like really intricate plot. The fact that it's only like an hour 50, including credits, feels right, but it also feels like it's shorter than it could be. Not that I want it to be longer, but like I feel like it could be longer. And I'm wondering what we missed out on.
It feels to me like they cut out the cops. I feel like there was at least a minor threat with the police going on, that they're just like, let's just axe all of this and get it out of here. And I actually feel like the movie starts to pick up a little once we introduce the other element, the guy who are buying gold from Ed Norton. Like, he kills that buyer, and then those dudes show up to, like, avenge him. Like, if only that happened, like, way earlier, and we sort of had more of this, like, mad dash to get the gold from all these different people, and then maybe the people who they stole it from originally tracked them down. There's threads that could be pulled much more in this movie. I see it. I see some holes in places.
The other thing I kept waiting for was that I was waiting for like a detective to show up and actually kind of like look into the death of the pawn broker, which would have actually made this a whole lot better, because you would have had the cops being chasing them and also the guards on the motorcycles as well, which would have made everything much more interesting.
Criminals don't snitch.
Dude, no, Skinny Pete is probably my favorite part of this movie.
I think it's everybody's.
Not the Skinny Pete from Breaking Bad, a very different Skinny Pete.
Oh, that's right, that's right. And then what was Statham's name? Handsome Pete?
There
was
like Rob.
Handsome Rob, okay. Like, they all had these really dumb, sort of simple nicknames.
Left Ear or whatever.
Yeah, but Skinny Pete's, like, was mentioned so early, I was like, that is so dumb. Like, look at Mark Wahlberg having to seriously say, like, my contact Skinny Pete, like, two or three times. But then when he shows up, I was like, okay, that joke paid off, because the dude's, like, 500 pounds.
Yeah.
And is just smacking golf balls off a putting green, basically.
You'll get it next time.
Yeah, that's a great little visual, where he's just one-arming it off and then just flying away.
I don't have a lot more to say about this movie. There are some things that I do want to say about the behind the scenes, that everybody apparently got driving lessons, because a lot of them do drive in this movie, but everybody on set acknowledged that Charlize is the best driver on set, which is really cool for us.
Nice.
I think
Mad Max foreshadowing.
And also the mini that she drives at the beginning of the movie, I actually read on IMDb too, so take this with a grain of salt, is that it's a throwback to the original Italian Job.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
The red one.
That's an awesome intro where she's just weaving in and out of traffic and slides right into the parking spot.
I thought it was New York for a second, and I was like, she's driving faster in New York than anyone has ever driven in New York. But I also feel like she's probably driving faster in LA than anybody's ever driven faster. Like,
well, she's in Philly, isn't she, at that point?
Yes,
Philly.
Really? Oh.
Yeah, that's it's why
still,
it's like,
that's why
no, it's still too
so
fast. But yeah, I just feel like she had the road size, the size of the roads are a little bigger, I guess, or wider, so I could see her maneuvering a little easier. And then they get to LA, it's just like bumper to bumper traffic.
And then the other thing was that she got 2 speeding tickets while going home from filming this movie, because she was such in a mindset of driving fast that she got 2 speeding tickets while making this movie, including one time she was doing 40 over the speed limit. So that's cool.
Whoa.
Good job, Charlize.
Oh, I wonder if they used that as inspiration for Jason Statham's final ending, where he gets pulled over, except oh, it turns out to be the cable girl's twin sister, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know. The other Charlize facts I have were that Charlize was F. Gary Gray's first choice for this role, but apparently Mark Wahlberg also recommended her, so I guess, you know, they hit it off on The Yards. You know, that near masterpiece, The Yards.
Minor masterpiece.
Charlize was bragging about Donald Sutherland playing her father, but they never filmed scenes together, so take that for what it's worth.
Oh, yeah, we never find out what he sends her. I always thought that was going to come back.
It's a necklace. They show her looking at the necklace.
Oh, they did show her. Oh, right.
They show it in the beginning of the movie, too. He sends it to her, and she asks, does it have a receipt? And then you see her wearing it at the date with Edward Norton, too.
Oh, okay, cool. Because I know there was that one scene, Mark Wahlberg like comes to her house, and she's like, get the hell out. And he's like, we're going to, you know, get revenge for your dad. And she's like, get the hell out. But then there's like that one scene that lasts like 30 seconds maybe, where she's contemplating like alone. So I thought maybe she was looking at the necklace there or something. But she comes around real quick, by the way. It's just like, it's probably like an hour. Yeah, I thought that there were definitely, it was going to be like a montage of like trying to get her to agree to like come into the crew or whatever. But she's like, nope, I'm down.
Well, that's what's super weird is that like, not only does she like quickly come around, but she also apparently has this like shorthand with Mark Wahlberg when they're trying to figure out how to get the gold out. And he's like, how wide is this tunnel? And Seth Green says 6 feet. And he looks at her and she's like, oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, how do you have this shorthand for like the Mini? Like, where did that come from?
Came straight out of BMW's pockets. That's where it came from.
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, who knows if they were just like coming up with shit, you know, on the spot too at times. This feels a little, it felt a little like one of those things that like any, you, like a Jenga, like I think I've come up with this analogy before, but like it's just like one block from crumbling, you know, it's just barely holding itself together, I feel, and like one more misstep and this whole thing would have just been like way, way worse. I mean, it's still pretty bad, don't get me wrong.
It's a, I was reading the reviews,
it's watchable.
They're all just like, it's not that great, it's fine. It's,
well, that's what's
watch.
So crazy. It's like, I remember this being really hyped, like when it came out, people being like, the fucking Italian Job has like crazy chase scenes and all this shit in it. So maybe the first time I sat down, I was overhyped because I was like expecting an amazing chase scene or something. And I was like, it's all right. Like, there's stuff happening, I guess. But like, it's not like one of my favorites by any means.
I mean, it just got to the point where like, I remember the first time I got it because I got it with the original Italian Job, a 2-pack. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to watch both back to back. And I watched the original recently and I said, oh, I should go revisit the remake for this podcast before I forget. And I sat and watched that and I'm like, wow, this is kind of lackluster.
Oh, I caught this time because I'm going to try and catch this as much as possible. Just for whatever movie I watch, but at an hour 18, 20 seconds, titular line is
I wrote that down.
We'll do it like the Italian Job.
Yep, Marky Mark says that. I was like, yep.
While I was paying a lot of attention for product placement, I heard a stellar plug for Carson Security. Did you guys catch that?
Oh, that I that was hilarious because I remember that was like an actual, that wasn't made up for the movie.
Wait, it wasn't?
Was it?
Wait, no. Carson's a real security firm, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it wasn't made up for the movie, so like that,
They took like a 15-second explanation about
why,
how they have
right?
this, like, this Carson Security, you can't hack our systems, hack off, and that even Seth Green can't do it.
5 years running.
Oh, man.
No one's been paid.
No one's been
there's a this movie is mostly commercial.
Yeah. Did anybody notice that when they dropped the safe into the ground by Grauman's Chinese Theater that they had a giant Pepsi Blue ad for the duration?
Pepsi Blue,
just like Napster. Those are my two favorite things.
Yeah, let's talk about a good period piece for 2003.
Well, I was wondering, like, that was the only time where I was like, well, this is like, they're actually filming. This must have been a logistics nightmare that day with like clearing that street and filming in front of the theater. And I mean, I know they do it from time to time, and there must be like a protocol.
Oh, this is actually like one of the few times that actually they did get permission from LA to do it.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so that was pretty impressive. I was like, I can't believe that they're actually shooting there and doing it.
They just got permission from LA, and they went with it that day.
You can see a Build-A-Bear factory store there. I only know that because I have young nieces and nephews and stuff, but like, I was like, I haven't noticed that product.
Two other little bits of sexism that I felt bad about for Charlize. Number one, when she is dressing as Becky to go into the house, Charlize, they're putting the American pin on her chest, which is the camera, and Mark Wahlberg like puts it on because I guess she can't do it, and he pricks her in the boob.
Oh, Seth Green pricks her.
Seth Green? Okay, again.
Yeah, because
again,
he's the clumsy nerd who never touched a girl before.
Right. Yep. But then also, at one point, Edward Norton, when they're in the restaurant, he tells them to put a leash on your cat, calling Charlize a cat.
Yeah.
So,
it's a weird thing
to
say.
Cool. Thank you, movie. Good job, movie.
But also, they were all like waiting in the restaurant.
Yeah.
Wait, like, I'm just picturing them sitting around the corner and the waiter's being like, can I help you? Just for like the first hour of the date.
Well, so what happened was they were going to do the heist then, but then the neighbor was having a party. So I guess their backup plan was to go to the restaurant.
But wouldn't that have been like the perfect time to do the heist? Because like, there's all that noise from the party. Like, if they make noise, no one's going to notice.
Well, no, I think they were saying like, if there's like an explosion, because there are going to be explosions. Said if there's explosions, then people would know and they would call the cops or whatever.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
But Jack, I'm with you though. Like, as soon as the jig is up at the restaurant, like they're all there as if they were like having dinner there or next door or something like that. That seemed a little
all Ed Norton has to do is press charges on assault, and then like at least one of them, like Mark, is out for at least a couple of weeks in you know, local jail,
and he can make his getaway.
Yeah, exactly.
Jared, do you have any other notes about the Italian job before we move on to our game for the podcast?
I like to mention the very shitty cover of Pink Floyd's Money that shows up.
Twice.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Twice, which was very... I am a big Pink Floyd fan, and I don't think I noticed it the first couple times I watched it, but then when I actually watched it this time, I was like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, they couldn't get it. And then the other thing that made me laugh was that cable internet back then was super expensive.
Oh yeah. Dude, yeah. What did he drop, 30 grand?
Yeah, I think so. And then also, I just wanted to mention too, since I'm a little bit of a car guy and this is kind of a car movie, Handsome Rob says he wants an Aston Martin. He could have easily got any other car at the time, but I just found that funny that he said like probably a high level sports car over like a Ferrari Modena or a Lamborghini Mustang Largo, which would have been the two sport cars at the time to go for.
Huh. Well, I mean, that's like a joke that's like played off better in the Fast and Furious movies, is that after they pull off that major heist, you know, they get one of the four cars that's left in the world, and then I think Roman gets one, and then like Tej gets another. So like
yes,
they both have these
right.
like super ultra rare cars, but they both have the same car as each other. Yep. So like that's Donny a joke Harai's. That plays well in Fast and Furious.
Yep.
That just does not. They're like, hey, we're not going to worry about that.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It doesn't work at all in this film. I was just like, you could have said something else, but whatever.
Zach, any other thoughts about the Italian job? Your second Mark Wahlberg, Charlize Theron team up?
Not as good as the Yards.
Not as good as the Yards. That's a good life lesson. You know, if this movie is better or worse than the Yards, if it's better, it's a great movie. If it's worse, it still might be good because the Yards is a near masterpiece. Mike, any other thoughts before we move on?
Watching this, I wasn't just thinking of like Fast and the Furious, you know, cashing in on remakes, but I also got like a very Ocean's vibe off of this one too, just because like most of the crew were dudes, I guess. Like they just had kind of like that snappy Ocean sort of wannabe feel about them. So like, oh, like, I don't know, like ultimately I feel like this movie is made up of better movies. Like you could just go watch like three or four really good movies that this thing is trying to be, and definitely try and check out that original version,
or just watch any one movie that this is trying to be. Like don't have to watch four movies, just like watch one of like any number of movies, and
go watch and literally like any of the Fast and Furious movies.
Or Ocean's 11.
Or Ocean's 11. Or
yeah, or the 12 or 13. 13.
Yeah. Or Logan Lucky.
Mission
Ocean's
Impossible. That's Mission Impossible.
Yeah. Or those. Just name any movie. No.
The Family Man.
The Family Man. There we go. That's what we're going to end on. So, okay. So the game that we play, and we're going to change it up a little bit since last time we were on, Zach. We are going to pitch a sequel to this movie that I don't think any of us really liked. This is the last time, because this is episode 20, we're going to play this for a little while. Mike and I need to come up with the next game before the next episode. We have not talked about this yet. But we are going to collectively... I think, because I just don't want to each do it because I don't care enough about this movie to pitch my own sequel. We're going to collectively come up with a sequel for The Italian Job 2, which I feel like if you told me that it exists, I wouldn't be surprised. That, like, if it was a straight-to-DVD Walmart $5 bin, to quote Joe 2, like, I would not be surprised if this exists. I don't think it does, but if there was going to be an Italian Job 2, what would it be about?
The Mars job.
Dude, I want to go to space so bad and so fast.
Them trying to steal a rare painting from a museum in New York or L.A.
So sort of Ocean's 12-y, sort of in that way, but brought back to America. I do like the idea of going to space. Maybe they're trying to steal art from space.
Oh.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Ancient Martian artifact.
Like, I was going to say, you know, when I was watching this movie, I was trying to think of a sequel, and I was thinking, you know, it could be about, like, Edward Norton trying to get his revenge, but we don't see it happen, but ostensibly he gets killed, so he's not going to come back.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody sort of has a happy ending. They're all rich now.
Mos Def has a room just for his sneakers. Dude, and this year, what was this, 2006? Like, I was such a sneakerhead back then.
2003.
2003, I'm sorry. Like, I was even more. I had so many boxes of sneakers. Like, I would have loved to have had just a room just for my sneakers. I got rid of most of them and bought movies.
I think they just said shoes. I mean, that if you, they well, showed they, at the end, it looked like the kind of leather shoes and stuff. I don't know.
I thought he had. I don't. Maybe I was just assuming because it was Mos Def. He was into sneakers, but
there was a mix of dress shoes and sneakers in that closet, from what I remember.
I do like that you are the shoes that you see in the world. That Zach feels like a classier sort of leather shoe guy, and he sees leather shoes. Mike, a man just like me, sees sneakers. I was not paying attention because I don't give a shit about shoes. And I guess Jarrett just sees like reality. So I like all four of our answers. Jarrett. So the Italian Job 2.
Objective observer.
Does anybody have any motivation in this movie to like do a sequel? Like, I guess they could run out of money theoretically, or I don't know.
Mark and Charlize have a marital dispute, and maybe like one gets more in the divorce, and the other steals from them,
like a Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing.
Yeah.
Or I was thinking Edward Norton somehow survived the Ukrainian mobsters and kidnaps the future kids of Charlize and Mark Wahlberg. And holds them for ransom, and they had to steal the money back to get them back.
I was just about to go there, too. Exactly. I was thinking maybe Norton's, like, all twisted and damaged and everything. He's got, like, who knows if he's got a blade leg, Joey, you know, instead of a prosthetic or something.
I like it.
Stolen shout out.
I like it.
I mean, I actually thought about this when they were taking him away. I think the sequel to this is The Human Centipede. I think Ed is about to go get Human Centipede.
Oh, man. Great. Terrific. And also in our sequel, Charlize and Mark Wahlberg find out that they are cousins, and they are okay with it.
There you go.
I actually was pulling for, and I know because he was like nicknamed Handsome Man or whatever, that like Jason Statham was all about his masculinity and stuff, but like how great and like forward would this have been if him and Mos Def were a couple? Like, I just think like that would have been so cool and fun and like so like not even played up, like they don't even mention it or anything, but like little hints, you know, if you're looking for it. I don't know, so maybe in the sequel they get together.
You could cut together a Call Me By Your Name type trailer from this. The cops are after me.
They are. They knew that you pulled the Italian Job. Okay,
the
so
Dizan Job.
I think, do we have a subtitle for Italian Job 2 where a lot of things happen that I don't remember because I don't want to think about this movie anymore? Do we have a subtitle? The Italian Job 2, This One's in Space?
With Human Centipedes?
With Human Centipedes. No.
Like the next Italian Job.
Yeah.
Well, did they?
That.
Yeah. Like, because it looks like they actually moved to Italy, right? Like they're on a gondola at the end and everything. So, like, let's actually for one solid thing about this sequel, let's actually have it set in Italy.
The Italian Career.
Oh,
I like that.
The Italian Job 2, The Italian Career. Cool. Done and done. So the last thing that we do on the show is nominate this movie for awards, good and bad. First off the bat, I'm going to nominate this for. Do we have most sexist film? Yep, The Italian Job.
Oh, the anti-femmes.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm also going to nominate worst male actor role, Edward Norton.
I agree with that.
Best raptor, Mos Def.
Yep.
Or not just raptor. I think the category is expanded
musician turned
because
actor.
Musician turned actor now because others have popped up.
Dance scene, no. Score soundtrack, no. Song, we're not going to nominate that stupid, shitty cover of Pink Floyd here. Cinematography, no. Freak
I feel like
out
the music in this would have been great in a different movie, like Spider-Man Homecoming or something. Like, that's what it kind of started reminding me of. That movie's been on a lot, and like I kind of like the music, the score to that one. And this felt like more of that, like a comic book movie or something.
You know who could have or should have scored this movie, Mike? And maybe it's just because it's what we've been talking about, but like David Holmes. Just take a David Holmes, let him score
totally
this movie, and just
add
be done with it.
Add some more funk to it or something, yeah.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
They did like Baby Driver. That would have been great.
Or that, yeah.
Yeah, because it was a little too like tick-tock, hit tick-tock, 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 tock-tock, like that. This. And then it was
something.
Like, bum, 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 bum. I was like, ugh.
I'm not going to nominate this for worst love story because there isn't a love story. The fact that like they end up together is just baffling.
That is so baffling. Like, I actually thought that it was kind of good that they weren't getting romantic, you know, that they were just, it was like a mutual respect for her dad and everything. And like, if anything, he was coming across more of like a brotherish kind of like guy for a while, you know, being like embarrassed to see her in her bra and like didn't want to whatever and this and like, so that was weird.
Yeah. The only other thing, I don't think we should nominate this for any other awards unless you guys think that there is something else that deserves recognition, good or bad. The only
best
thing that
driving
I want to say is that
we might get she's been drive. It's weird, like best Joey, maybe we could do like a best Mad Max premonition scene or something because she's been in like a bunch of like if we cut together four or five scenes we could splice them right into Mad
so there's
Max.
The Mighty Joe Young chase, there's this,
there's the stuff,
is there
in,
anything else?
The Fate and the Furious and Mad Max.
Well, yeah, but I think Mike's saying that like it's stuff leading up to Mad Max, like hey, that we're gonna see her do this one day. You know, best scene that leads to it, right, Mike?
Are you prematurely calling Mad Max just the pinnacle of her career?
Yeah. Because Mad Max is like one of my like 15 favorite movies. Like, there's not going to be a better movie that we cover. I mean, I've never seen Monster, which we're doing next week, which I'm really excited for, but, like, I don't see me liking any of her back half of her catalog more than I like Mad Max. But if I do, man, oh, man, there's going to be a gem in here. I could tell you that much.
Like, the one thing about it, it's kind of like, it's like her Matrix, you know? Like, if there's better movies or she's better in them, it's just too bad because that movie is such a badass, awesome movie that kicks so much ass that it's just gonna trump it.
There's a handful of movies that I really love. Like, I really love Young Adult. You know, obviously I love Fate of the Furious because it's the Too Fast, Too Forever thing. I love a lot of movies that we have coming up, or not a lot, but a handful of movies. But just like Mad Max is just like, it's just another, it's just like another level. And I really do think that a lot of the people that we polled about who to do for this round probably picked her just for that movie. Like, the people love that movie, love her in it, and they're like, oh yeah, she's got a great career. But as we have learned, it's been
it's
a rough
that
one.
Not bad.
it's a little rockier than, and that the first half has been pretty kind of rocky. Oh, Men of Honor, when she maybe, was it Men of Honor, where it was like she was behind the car? Or Reindeer Games, or something.
Men of Honor, she drunkenly crashes into a pole, so not that one.
Okay, was it Reindeer Games, or at the end she gets run off a cliff? So
yeah, I don't think. We'll think about that. If we can think of more, we'll nominate her for the next time. Well, the last thing I want to say was that her name in this movie is Stella, and since we just recorded the Disaster Artist episode, I was just thinking of Stella, of Franco as Tommy, or just Tommy from the book, yelling Stella, doing his Marlon Brando impression.
Isn't New Orleans another Stolen connection?
Any sort of last thoughts about the episode or the movie or whatever? I mean, I think we've exhausted this movie. I was looking forward to this one too, and last week when Mike was so down on Waking Up in Reno, which I really genuinely liked a lot,
and which, like, let me just say, I'm kind of sorry Waking Up in Reno. You might have caught me on a bad day, but
go watch it again. It's delightful.
You did not deserve that. I really feel kind of bad. Like, this movie deserved it more than you did. So.
But I was looking forward to this one because I was like, we had such a rough stretch. You know, Waking Up in Reno had bad reviews. I was like, I'm not going to like this. I wound up liking it, but I was like, okay, at least we got two good ones in a row with The Italian Job and Monster. And then we got this, and I was like, oh boy. So I hope and I'm sure that I will love Monster, but man oh man, for a milestone episode, number 20, The Italian Job truly let me down. Jarrett, any last thoughts? We thank you for being on this episode. We are so glad that you could join us, but any last thoughts about this movie or Charlize or anything?
I just wanted to say that I'm looking back on this now, and this movie is really, like, not what I thought it was going to be. 15-year-old me was very, very impressed with it because I'm like, oh wow, this is impressive, the cars are cool, but now I'm like thinking back on it and I'm saying, man, I was a very dumb teenager. And also, I'd like to say that with Charlize, like, this is one of the first movies that I actually was exposed to her as an actress. And I kind of, like, that's what kind of set me off. And now, like, anytime I hear something, she's in something, I'm like, okay, I'll give it a look and see how it's going to be. And this is kind of, like I say, she's got to be better than she is in The Italian Job.
Everything Jarrett said. Except I thought she was fine in Italian Job. Italian Job wasn't very fine to her.
Yeah, it wasn't good for her. That was the problem.
Yeah, I mean, this feels almost like it needed a Michael Bay in it or something like that, right? Like, yeah. It's got all those elements, except it can't deliver him or anything, but yeah. And I also feel like, you know, I just feel like, yeah, this is much more targeted toward a younger audience, like, you know, your first action movie or something, or your first heist film. Like, that I could see maybe
Baby's
on...
Baby's First Heist.
Yeah, Baby's First Heist, exactly. The Italian Job remake, 2003.
Ugh. Well, thank you both for being on here. You can check out Zach's previous episode of The Yards and all of our other Watch a Throne episodes at cageclub.me. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/cageclub or on Twitter at cageclubpod. You can see all the shows, all the episodes. This episode is coming out on April 13th, which means Mike's second episode of his podcast, Third Time's a Charm, is out now, so go check that out. You know, we are about halfway through Watch the Throne, so we're going to be wrapping up in just a few months. Go catch up on past episodes if you haven't listened to them yet. Email us, watch@cageclub.me. You know, let us know what you think about Charlize or the movie or podcast or whatever. Just say hi. I don't care. We'll read anything on air. But yes, just go to cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, and @cageclubpod on Twitter. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Zach Dazon and Jarrett Brown, and we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.